This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Hello and welcome. I'm Natalie Pinsham. I'll be reading synopses of some of the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery on March 29, 2013. The topics of the articles featured in this podcast are oncology, vascular disorders, surgical technique, and diagnostic and operative techniques. Displacement of mammillary bodies by craniopharyngiomas involving the third ventricle. Surgical MRI correlation and use in topographical diagnosis. A clinical article by José María Pascual and colleagues. Surgical treatment of craniopharyngiomas involving the third ventricle is associated with a high risk of hypothalamic injury. The best way to avoid such a devastating complication is to accurately preoperatively define the topographical relationships between the lesion and the third ventricle. This study analyzes the reliability of magnetic resonance imaging to preoperatively ascertain the exact anatomical position of intraventricular craniopharyngiomas. The anatomical third ventricle distortions identified in 130 intraventricular craniopharyngiomas on both pre- and postoperative MRI were correlated with the surgical findings. The authors observed that the mammillary bodies are the only structures of the third ventricle floor that can usually be identifiable on preoperative mid-sagittal magnetic resonance images. They represent a helpful clue to define the intraventricular craniopharyngioma topography. The relative displacement of the mammillary bodies regarding the plane of the floor of the fourth ventricle was found to be a useful sign to discriminate craniopharyngiomas strictly located within the third ventricle from those lesions primarily developing at either the suprasellar cistern or within the proper third ventricle floor, called not strictly intraventricular craniopharyngiomas. This displacement is termed the mammillary body angle. Other useful variables for discriminating the craniopharyngioma topography are the hypothalamus location on the coronal plane, the presence of hydrocephalus and/or psychiatric symptoms, and the patient's age. Co-localization of thin-walled dome regions with low hemodynamic wall shear stress in unruptured cerebral aneurysms. A clinical article by Laith Mohamed Kadasi and co-authors. Brain aneurysms constitute a significant source of mortality and morbidity, and they remain a leading cause of disability. Despite advances in the understanding of vascular biology and improvements in neurosurgical treatment, the mechanism of aneurysm wall thinning and rupture remains poorly understood. It has long been suspected that blood flow patterns and mechanical forces play a role in aneurysm development and growth. Recent research has pointed to the possible role of wall shear stress, the frictional force acting on the endothelial lining as a result of blood flow. In order to better understand the link between wall shear stress and aneurysm development and rupture, the authors reviewed high-quality intraoperative surgical microscope recordings for ultra-thin regions of the aneurysm dome. Simultaneously, they ran computational fluid dynamic simulations on the corresponding 3D vascular volume to correlate local hemodynamics to aneurysm wall thinning. Dr. Malek's team found that ultra-thin regions of unruptured aneurysm domes co-localized with areas of low wall shear stress and high focal pressure, both corresponding to flow stasis. These results are the first to link aneurysm thickness with local mechanical forces in unruptured lesions. They suggest that the need for continued research on the link between cellular mechanotransduction and aneurysm pathophysiology. Infarction of the lateral posterior choroidal artery territory after manipulation of the choroid plexus at the atrium. Causal association with subependymal artery injury. A clinical article by Ryuta Saito and co-workers. The authors investigated the possible mechanisms causing the relatively high incidences of ischemic complications associated with surgery approaching the atrium of the lateral ventricle. Clinical records and radiological images of 28 patients were retrospectively studied, in which the lateral ventricle was opened at the atrium during the resection of gliomas. Routine postoperative diffusion-weighted magnetic resonance images obtained within 72 hours after surgery detected infarction in the periatrial periventricular regions in 7 patients, presumably corresponding to the lateral posterior choroidal artery territory. The choroid plexus at the atrium was coagulated to achieve hemostasis during the surgery in all these patients. Detailed analysis of microangiograms revealed ventriculofugal arteries arising from the lateral ventricle. Damage of the subependymal artery that supplies the ventriculofugal arteries, caused by coagulation of the choroid plexus at the atrium, probably resulted in the infarction in these patients. Neurosurgeons must be aware of the possibility of infarction in the lateral posterior choroidal artery territory during surgery in the atrial or periatrial regions, caused by subependymal artery obstruction after manipulating or coagulating the choroid plexus near the atrium. Imagine your neighbor mows the lawn, a pilot study of psychological sequelae due to awake craniotomy. A clinical article by Monica Millian and colleagues. In cases in which a tumor is located adjacent to or in an eloquent brain area, an awake craniotomy is indicated. This work is a pilot study concerning possible psychological sequelae of awake craniotomy. Patients undergoing an awake surgery were surveyed with a self-developed questionnaire, which adopts the core components of the post-traumatic stress disorder criteria. None of the patients included in this study complained about psychological sequelae that were similar to a post-traumatic stress disorder after the awake surgery. Only 12% of the patients presented with postoperative psychological sequelae resembling post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms. However, single psychological symptoms after awake surgery in the form of re-experiencing the event, avoiding stimuli associated with the event, or symptoms of increased arousal occur to a considerable degree and have a clear negative impact on health-related quality of life. Therefore, possible aversive long-term effects of awake surgery should be taken into account when planning the operation and should be fully explained to patients before the surgical procedure is performed. White matter tractography, why we need to move beyond DTI. A clinical article by Shauna Farquharson and co-authors. Diffusion-based MRI tractography is increasingly used in neurosurgery to generate 3D maps of white matter pathways as an aid to identifying safe margins of resection. The authors of this study explain that the majority of tractography software packages currently available to clinicians rely on a fundamentally flawed framework to generate fiber orientations from diffusion-weighted data, namely diffusion tensor imaging, or DTI. This work provides the first extensive and systematic exploration of the practical limitations of DTI tractography and investigates whether the constrained spherical deconvolution, or CSD, tractography model provides a reasonable solution within a clinically feasible timeframe. The authors used both DTI and CSD tractography to visualize the corticospinal pathways in 45 healthy volunteers and 10 patients with risk of neurological deficit following resection of various types of lesions. Their results show that DTI-based tractography methods, both deterministic and probabilistic, result in systematically unreliable and clinically misleading information. In contrast, the CSD-based method successfully reconstructed in all cases the expected fan-shaped configuration of tracts descending from the sensory motor cortex, and clinically provided improved estimates of safety margins that may be useful in neurosurgical procedures. The authors emphasize the need to move beyond DTI-based tractography methods in order to provide neurosurgeons with biologically reliable tractography information. Ophthalmic vein compression for selected benign low-flow cavernous sinus dural arteriovenous fistulas. A report of three cases by Juan Pablo Cruz and co-workers. Dural arteriovenous fistulas of the cavernous sinus are acquired shunts between dural branches of the internal and external carotid artery and the cavernous sinus. These fistulas may present with cortical venous reflux, but more commonly drain towards the superior ophthalmic vein. In some cases, endovascular access to the fistula is not possible. In selected low-flow fistulas, intermittent manual compression of the superior ophthalmic vein is an excellent alternative treatment approach. It is permitted only in benign fistulas with no cortical venous reflux. This technique is well known and has been practiced for many years by interventionalists, but to date it has not been reported in the literature. To increase awareness of this option among the younger generation of interventionalists, the authors report three cases treated successfully with this technique. Although spontaneous closure of this type of lesion is known to occur over time, it is reported to take many weeks to months, while the maneuver described in this report accelerates shunt closure. Thank you for listening to the Journal of Neurosurgery. To listen to more of our podcasts, please visit us at www.thejns.org. You can also follow the Journal of Neurosurgery Publishing Group on Twitter and now also on Facebook.